Hello and welcome to the first episode of LaunchPod, the podcast from the LaunchPad team. I'm Matthew Ravel in Wolverhampton in the UK, and I'm joined with by...
Hi, I'm Elliot Murphy. I'm in Cocoa Beach, Florida.
And I'm Joey Stanford, and I'm in the beautiful and sunny Boulder, Colorado, USA area.
Hi, well, welcome to our podcast. Each week we'll be talking about what's going on in the team, what's happening with LaunchPad, and also talking to people who use LaunchPad about the interesting things that they've done with it and how they've found success with LaunchPad. This week we're going to be interviewing Tony from Rescue Time. Elliot, do you want to give us a quick précis of what that's going to be about?
So Rescue Time's interesting. They're a little company that's made a really interesting web application that helps you track what you're doing on your computer to manage your personal productivity. And their community actually built a client for Linux and published it using LaunchPad. So I think that's going to be an interesting case study of how open source meets with a small company that with not very many resources.
Great, excellent. I'm looking forward to that already. What else have we got in the podcast today? Well, we'll be taking some user questions. We've got a couple of questions that we'll be answering about LaunchPad. And we're also going to be announcing the winner of the LaunchPad logo contest. Now, before we get into all of that, though, I want to tell you how you can get in touch with us and get your questions or suggestions for what should be on the podcast. The easiest way to do it is to send us an email to feedback@launchpad.net. You can also go to the podcast page on the LaunchPad Help Wiki. So if you go to help.launchpad.net/podcast, that's podcast with a capital P, it's case sensitive, then you can see links to previous episodes, such as this one, by the time you listen to this. And also you'll be able to see a little area where you can put your question for the next podcast or your suggestion. So either do it by email or on the wiki, doesn't matter. Either way, we'll get it and we'll be very pleased to hear from you. Okay, so let's get on with things. Joey, a few months ago, you announced the LaunchPad logo contest. Joey, why were we looking for a new logo for LaunchPad?
It's actually kind of interesting, Matt. We've actually really liked our existing logo, but one of the things that we, as we've been growing as a company, and actually LaunchPad itself growing in maturity, we've realized we wanted to have something a little bit more professional looking, a little less perhaps cartoony looking. And we just came up with this idea, and we thought, oh, this would be a great idea. We should have a new logo. And then I hit upon the idea of why don't we just make it a community contest? And because we already know from our experiences with Ubuntu that we have this amazing, at least on the Ubuntu side, an amazing community of people with, you know, that are very diverse, have incredible range of talents. And, of course, an established art team. And we thought, well, maybe we have that same community, but perhaps a little bit latent, inside LaunchPad. So we kind of took a risk and put together the LaunchPad logo contest. And I have to say, I'm extremely pleased with the results. I think everybody's been just quite amazed with what happened.
I've got to be honest, the response has overwhelmed me. Over the weeks that we saw the entries come in, I was both impressed by the sheer volume of entries, but the quality of them as well. So thanks very much to everyone in the LaunchPad community who took part in the contest. It's fantastic. And I'm really excited that we can announce on the podcast, you may have seen it elsewhere by now, but we can tell you on the podcast now who has won the contest. Joey, who is that?
It's interesting. It's actually an Ubuntu and a Kubuntu developer who, by his own admission, is a he does developer by day and graphic design is his hobby. His name is Eugene Tretiak, and he submitted the logo that's won. It's the one that that has a nice launchpad name, and then it has this diamond or gem shaped object like a lozenge is attached to it. The competition for this particular winner was just it's for the winner of the program was just intense. There were so many different submissions. As you said, Matt, they were just fantastic, phenomenal. The quality was just amazing. we struggled. Quite frankly, we struggled. We had so many suggestions internally for what was really going to be a good representative entry for Launchpad. And in fact, it was so difficult that it took us a long time just to narrow it down to a top three. And because of that, and because of the amazing designs we got, we decided to change the awarding scheme. Originally, as you may recall from the original announcement, we said we wanted to have one award. It was going to be that really cool Ubuntu Messenger bag. I've got one, by the way. They're fantastic. And that was going to be the prize for the winner. We decided to add two additional prizes, so I'm pleased to announce that we're going to give away two additional prizes, and those prizes are both 25-pound certificates to the Canonical shop. So
that's pounds sterling rather than really heavy gift certificates, right?
Yeah, I mean, the gift certificates are a really fantastic way. We looked at perhaps providing something else like Ubuntu fleeces or something similar. But in the end, it really came down to the flexibility that a gift certificate provides. We give it to somebody; they can choose what they want as an award, as opposed to it being prescribed by us.
Great. Okay. So where will we start using this logo? Is it going to take pride of place at the top of the Launchpad site eventually, or is it just something that we might use? Because at the moment, if you go to the Launchpad, there isn't a very heavy, strong logo on the Launchpad.net site, is there?
No, that's right. We've been talking about that quite a bit. We know we want to replace the Hakaguchis, the mugshots, maybe even some of the logo aspects that you find on project pages inside Launchpad. But with this particular logo, we'd also like to look at really branding Launchpad properly. So I expect to see this on the front page, and there's a small but exciting effort to perhaps even have T-shirts made with this new Launchpad logo. So I'm really excited to see how we'll be able to use this, in the future.
I very much hope as well that we'll be able to give away at least one T-shirt to future podcast listeners if we do get a few made up. That'd be great. Okay, Elliot, let's get on to this interview with Rescue Time.
Hi, Tony. Let's start off with finding out. Maybe you can tell us who you are and where in the world you're located.
I'm Tony Wright, the CEO of Rescue Time, and we are in sunny Seattle, Washington.
Awesome. So I've been using Rescue Time quite a bit myself the last few weeks. I'm really enjoying it. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing with it?
Yeah, so Rescue Time, it's a tool that allows people and businesses to understand exactly how they spend their time. And the goal, with Rescue Time is to do this in a way that does not require data entry. So essentially what it is it's a small widget that lives on your computer. It pays attention to what you're focusing on. And so that's not just what windows are open, but literally what website is sort of on top or what window is on top. And then allows you to do analytics on that data to really understand where your day goes.
Oh, that's really cool. So I work in a distributed team and have for years, and we've always kind of struggled with ways to keep track of like where does the day go. And I've really been enjoying using Rescue Time.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, for distributed teams is one of the things where we've seen a lot of interest, because I think you're right, you tend to lose that ability, that sort of gut feeling sense of how a team is doing. And there you can kind of find things that run away with you a little bit. I know with Rescue Time, for example, a big part of my day is responding to emails from people, both support and just people asking questions or throwing ideas our way. And that's my email time has been growing, every day. And it's one of those things where if I didn't see the data on it, I would, I think it would have snuck up on me just how much of my day, that's consuming. So it's pretty cool for distributed teams.
Yeah, and I like how you can tag things. So you can kind of create some arbitrary groupings. Maybe one thing is work and a certain project, and something else is both communication and work.
Right. Yeah, we had we thought that this data was interesting, but there's just too much of it, and the grouping kind of allows people to really understand a little bit deeper on where their day is going. Because I mean, you can imagine that you probably use communication being one of the dominant things that obviously happens on a computer. You probably have 3, 4, 5, 6 different apps or sites that you're using to actually communicate, whether it's Google Groups or, Adium IM client or Gmail or Outlook or whatever, and bundling those things all into one bucket to really get that picture of what communication is doing to your day is I think, generally pretty enlightening.
Yeah. So being a web service, you obviously are reaching out to people on a number of different platforms. And I was really pleased when I discovered Rescue Time that you had a Linux client. Can you tell us how that came about and your interaction with the Linux community?
Sure. Yeah. So we had on the Linux side. I mean, we are a 3-person company. We're I don't know whether you're going to call it pre-funding or unfunded, but we're still trying to work out the answer to that question ourselves. But we are, we're basically bootstrapping this ourselves. So when it came down to sort of talking about what platforms we knew we had to serve, because we're kind of a life hacking application, something that, productivity nuts would like, there's obviously a disproportionate number of Mac people and also a disproportionate number of Linux people. So we couldn't do what everyone does with desktop software, which is let's start with Windows and maybe someday we'll add Mac and never add Linux. But again, there's 3 of us and only about 1.5 of us were sort of engaged on developing the client. So we had to say basically, we can't do the Linux thing out of the gates. We did a little bit of research and found that the Linux people were about, 6-7%, which is a big enough number that it really stung to not develop it, but not quite a big enough number that we wanted to put off launching for that much longer to get it done. So initially, we launched with just Mac and PC. We had an API. The whole Rescue Time system is kind of very web services oriented. So theoretically, we could publish an API. We never did, and haven't yet. But it's very easy for sort of a savvy technologist to dig in there and see, oh, these guys are pushing this data to a web service, which is what a fella Angus did, who is a Linux guy who wanted to have Rescue Time for Linux, and he saw that we were doing pushing this data to a web service and said, hey, I could do this for Linux, and he reached out to us. And of course we helped him as much as we possibly could. It was really exciting for us to actually see the community sort of rise up. And it started with Angus but a whole mess of other people, have sort of chipped in, and made the whole Linux thing a reality well before we could have ever had any hope to do so. So it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. Once Angus got the uploader working, then I saw someone else added GNOME applet. And that was about the point where I discovered it. I was really excited about the domain whitelist idea, where there's particular websites that I really want to keep track of, like Gmail and Google Reader and things like that. But I don't want to see like every single website that I've ever clicked on during the course of a day, for every link that anybody ever sent me, show up in the list. And so I hacked on the domain whitelist support for Linux, and Angus, I think a couple of days after I put the branch up, merged it in, and it was a really fun experience for me to get to use Launchpad from that angle, since I'm usually working on it behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's funny. You never get to use your own the tools that you build as much as other people do. I find that I probably don't get to poke around in Rescue Time as much as I would if I was a user, just because I'm so busy working on it rather than in it. The whitelist functionality is something that I think, obviously one of the things that people look at with Rescue Time, and one of the concerns people oftentimes have is privacy, right? Is, do I really want Rescue Time tracking every single website that I visit? And also, I think there's that concern of, it's noise. I mean, if you're visiting, the average Rescue Time user, I think, visits somewhere in their neighborhood of 50 different web domains per day. Which is a big number, and obviously tons of those are just little 2- and 3-minute visits that still make up a significant chunk of their day, but you don't really need individual data on. So I think the whitelist functionality is a real neat option for, from the privacy angle, but also from just the noise reduction angle.
Yeah. So right now the Rescue Time Linux client is on Launchpad and is being released from there. There's a couple of different people contributing to it. What are your plans for the future of the Rescue Time client? I think you mentioned in the past doing some rewrites.
Yeah, so we did the standard popular thing to do with software. I would say is the right thing to do with software development, which is release early and release often. And so we released very early with the data collectors, and that was, and just for expediency's sake, on the Windows side we did it using the .NET framework, and on the Mac side we did it through some unholy arcane combinations of Cocoa and AppleScript. So it's not, the ideal environment. There's not a lot of shared code. So what we're working on right now is actually a full rewrite in C++ with some shared code, with the idea of A, it'll be a little bit easier to maintain, and B, it'd be easier to expand on. And something we have considered and still are talking about is the idea of, open sourcing the whole kit and caboodle. And there's obviously, I think the concern as guys who have never managed kind of, commercial, I guess the right way to say it is commercial open source projects, this would be software that our service would be dependent on. So, we're kind of going back and forth on what the overhead of that would be, and if that's the right, choice for sort of us and for our users. But it's really neat to see the Linux one in action, because it's kind of a way for us to sort of test drive open source for a kind of larger initiative across all the platforms.
Absolutely. I can see how refactoring to a shared library would really help. I think all the Linux stuff is in Python, just calling out to GTK. So having a shared library would definitely make it easier to get feature parity across all of your client platforms.
Right.
As you've interacted with folks using the Linux client and the other clients, is there anything that you'd like to see in Launchpad that we could add to make it easier for you?
Well, I think it's pretty darn cool. The 800-pound gorilla in the space, I guess, is SourceForge, and I think it's kind of aged not wonderfully. So we're really actually liking these sort of community features. A Launchpad. I think I talked to you briefly about I was interested in feeds and the concept of getting kind of getting data as things are happening in Launchpad, kind of getting that pushed in my direction, which apparently is there already, which is really, really cool. I think Launchpad is looking pretty good. I think the biggest, with any project like this, I think the biggest danger is that it would atrophy, that basically, that people wouldn't know it existed, people wouldn't know that the opportunity is there to work on it. One of the things that I think, oftentimes is really challenging with open source projects is just, getting the word out there that that there are so many young hackers out there that are eager to find projects to kind of cut their teeth on, that are eager to participate, to kind of build up their resume of cool stuff that they've had a hand in, and just getting that word out is something that we'd be really eager to see. And honestly, we'd love to see some innovation on the data collector side. I mean, I think there's feature parity is one thing, but obviously there's a bunch of smart people out there who probably have some better ideas than we do about what we could do with Rescue Time, and we'd love to see that community sort of get big enough and energized enough to be chipping in. But I mean, as with a couple of people right now, I mean, feature parity is a nice goal. So that's looking forward. Right. We'd love to see just more eyeballs.
Cool. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're interested in the innovation side as well. One of the things that is a central goal with Launchpad is to enable emergent contribution, or what I like to call drive-by contributions, where something happens, somebody runs into a bug, or they're inspired, they have an idea, and they know exactly how it should be implemented, they know exactly what should be done, or they have informed as far as what the prototype should look like. And we want to give them a way to publish that work without you needing to find out whether they're insane or not first. They should be able to publish it into Launchpad. And so that ties into the branch feeds that we were talking about earlier, where you can subscribe to an Atom feed for a project. And anyone that publishes a branch related to that project, you can see you can see that work emerging, see that work coming across your reader, and decide whether or not it's something that you want to pursue.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we really do like about Launchpad, I mean, compared to sort of, you know, your SourceForge, is it's simple, elegant, and also it feels sort of more social. It feels easier to engage with. And like you say, that sort of lowers the bar of kind of what's necessary to start getting involved and start, you know, sort of being heard. So we're pretty excited about it.
Well, Tony, thanks a lot for talking with us. Good luck with Rescue Team.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it was great to hear from Tony at Rescue Time there. I must say thanks very much to Jerry Schaefer for suggesting the name that we're using for the podcast, which is Launch Pod. We did have a few suggestions for names, including the Satellite Mission Control, but Launch Pod we thought was quite humorous. So thanks very much, Jerry. Okay, so we solicited your questions for this podcast. We've got a couple here. The first one is from Matt, and he posted his question at help.launchpad.net/podcast, and it's, will you add a wiki-like interface to collaboratively create software documentation in DocBook? Joey, is that something that we have planned?
Well, interesting enough, this is one of the features that I personally am really excited for us to add. Not necessarily for the output format, but to have a wiki-like interface inside Launchpad. We've known for a while that one of the biggest requested features inside Launchpad has been a wiki interface so that people could use it perhaps to, just like a traditional wiki, but also to present home pages, front pages to their projects, much like some of our competing products do. The reason we haven't done this, quite frankly, is it's a very difficult problem to solve. As soon as you open something that's a wiki or a web page, you then have to look at content and spam and inappropriate materials and things like that. In addition, we have to look at how we store that material inside Launchpad and be able to serve that appropriately to everybody. There's lots of different characteristics and problems that need to be thought through in order to do that.
Right. So the answer. Sorry.
Good. I was just going to ask Elliot if he had some comments, because I know Elliot has been really interested in this feature as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's something we'll be able to do right away, but it's something that I would love to have. I've worked on a team before that had an amazing system set up with DocBook, where from the time you made a document change, in about an hour, you would get new PDFs, new help output on the web, new compiled help modules for Windows, OS 10, the GNOME help format, like everything you can imagine. So I know that DocBook is a really, really powerful system, and I would like to have, I'd like to have a way where we can kind of give a helping hand to a project that's just getting started by providing a framework where they can drop some content in and get a whole bunch of useful documentation outputs back out. So it's something I'd really be interested in doing. Yeah, and I am constantly surprised at how many volunteers just appear and help projects with translations because of having the easy web interface. And so I'd love to see that extended to be available for documentation also.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really big win for all the projects since we have that.
Would there be some kind of review process, you think, that we'd introduce there? Or, I mean, obviously this is purely speculative at this stage, but I think it would be interesting to... For maybe teams of technical writers or, you know, documentation contributors involved in a project to be able to vote on perhaps new contributions and things like that to ensure that the quality is up, kept up.
Yeah, there's two principles that we use for all the features in Launchpad. One is that there should be no barrier for an unknown person to contribute, and then that there should be safeguards for project owners to control the quality of what goes into the project. So we'd want to make it some way where anybody who shows up on the site can make suggestions, and then there's a process for doing some quality checks on those suggestions before they get merged into the official stuff.
Great. Okay. Anything else to say on DocBook and wikis in Launchpad? Nope. Okay.
Nope.
Okay, Elliot, you mentioned that translations are a great way for people to get stuck into to contribute into a project. And we've actually had a question about Launchpad translations. And it's from someone who's put their name as V. Protkin. Sorry if I pronounced that badly. The question is, why do Launchpad translations require manual review? I spoke to Jeroen, who's the head of the Launchpad translation team, and unfortunately couldn't join us live on the podcast because his internet access is somewhat unpredictable at the moment. He lives in Thailand, and he says that it's quite rainy there, so it's making his internet access quite choppy, he said. So I spoke to him on IRC and got a few ideas over as to why Launchpad translations require review. So that, so the first reason is checking the format of the file to make sure it'll be able to be imported correctly into Launchpad. Jeroen says that translations templates can be arranged in all sorts of ways, and it takes a human being to figure out which templates there are and which translation files belong to them. And he said that can get particularly difficult when a new version of a template is uploaded that has something that's been renamed or moved, a file that's been renamed or moved. He says we could do this programmatically, but it would probably involve enough mistakes that it wouldn't make the automation worthwhile. He said there's a second reason as well, and that's to do with the approval of content. Now, one of the main benefits of Launchpad translations is that work that's entered in, translations that are made in Launchpad, are shared between projects. And so if you have people who are uploading translations files, for example, with test data in it, that isn't necessarily intended for use elsewhere, but it's just that they're trying out the system, and so they're just maybe creating a file with some nonsense in it, then that could be a problem later down the line, because although it's unlikely, there's a small chance that that nonsense might accidentally be suggested to someone who was working on a real translation for a project. And so the guys in the translations team go through new templates and translation files to make sure that they are they contain real content that wouldn't cause problems elsewhere. He says the quality is already high, but we want to keep it high, particularly as we are introducing more sophisticated searching. Well, searching full stop of strings within translations, and we'll be increasing the amount of search that we do later on. Now, there's a final reason as well. He said one that's quite important is the avoidance of duplication of effort. So at the moment, the way it works in Launchpad is that each project or distribution has a translation effort. Now, that can be split between individual translation efforts for, say, a different distro release or a different project series, a major release of a project, but there is always a canonical translation effort for each of those releases. It's not like a branch of code where you can create your own branch and start work on it and upload it to Launchpad, and other people can see it and download it as well, and it's all associated with the one project. No, with translations, there's one canonical effort, so you can't branch off and start doing your own translation. But some people, occasionally, probably by accident, do actually recreate a project that's already in Launchpad and upload a template and start translation on it. So Jeroen gave the example of, say, someone who wants to do a Georgian translation of WordPress, and they don't spot that WordPress is already in Launchpad, so they re-register it and start their translation effort. The problem there is that their work might go to waste because it's not being contributed to the official WordPress project within Launchpad, but also that someone else might come along and see their new WordPress project, the unofficial one in Launchpad, and start, say, translating in French. And their work would also perhaps go to waste because it's not being put in the right place. So part of the manual review is to prevent duplication and make sure that when someone uploads a template or a translation file, that they're doing so to the correct place, and that they're doing so in such a way that it'll actually stands a chance of getting used by the upstream project. So that's pretty much the answer of why translations go through manual review. Elliot, Joey, do you have anything to add to that?
Nope.
Okay, all right, cool. I've got a couple of things to mention about translations just while we're talking about them. One is that Arne Goetsche, he's now taking on a new role that sits between the Ubuntu community and Launchpad Translations. And I believe that the term they're using is a translations technical contact for Ubuntu. So what he's going to do is, well, Jeroen describes it as he'll be the one who improves the fit between Launchpad Translations and the Ubuntu community. So he'll do things such as acting as a first point of contact for Ubuntu translators who have technical questions about Launchpad. He'll also check the integrity of translation templates for Ubuntu, and he'll also be involved in enrolling new translations teams for Ubuntu. So Jeroen's actually quite excited about this because it means that it'll take some of the it'll free up some of the Launchpad translations team to actually work on improving Launchpad Translations, the application, and to give it new features and improve the features already there. And although they'll still be available to the community and they'll still very much want to talk to members of the Ubuntu community, Arne is going to be a kind of a first port of call.
I think that's a fantastic thing, Matt. We, about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, we had a community member in a similar role, Agi Maciel, who did a fantastic job, but the workload there from the translation, there's so much interest in translations that position just gets hammered literally with email. Just the volume is amazing. I'm really happy that Arnie's stepped up into that role because it's going to provide Ubuntu, a way of being able to gather and marshal all of these translation resources and make certain that are already very good translations are even better.
Yeah, and I suppose you should say that this is a community role rather than a canonical employment role. The other bit of news I have to do with Launchpad Translations, there's now a beta in place for profile searching. So essentially, you'll be able to search translations. This is a much requested feature for Launchpad, and the translation guys have worked basically over the past year to try and find the best way of implementing this, the way that gets the best results, that is coded most efficiently so it doesn't, result in timeouts and everything. Very, very keen for people to try it out in beta, to file bugs, to say if something could work better or, to say that they're happy with the way it works. Whatever the feedback is, the translations guys will be really grateful for it. So the way to find out more about that is to go to help.launchpad.net/beta testing. Now, it's a capital B and a capital T. And there you'll find details on how about our beta setup and how to sign up for the Launchpad Beta Testers team. And there will also be details there of the profile searching beta, so you'll know what to do from there. So that's it from user questions and a little bit of news from translations there. Guys, before we wrap up, have you got anything else you'd like to say?
Matt, I thought we might tell the Launchpad community maybe some statistics or two at every single podcast, and I happen to have one prepared if you're interested.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely superb, yeah.
All right. Well, I get a lot of questions from people about how many users we have inside Launchpad, and as well as what our machine makeup is and things of that nature. So I thought I'd try that first one, how many actually valid people we have inside Launchpad. And, as of today's show, we have just under 1.8 million different people that are registered in Launchpad. Those are valid people versus, we say, invalid people that were created for package imports and whatnot.
Well, that's astonishing.
And judging by the way the graph's going, by the 1st of July, we should hit 2 million users inside Launchpad.
Wow, so these are real people who've chosen to sign up to Launchpad.
That's correct. That's
amazing.
Correct. When you look at these graphs, you obviously see spikes at Ubuntu releases, Ubuntu times. There's a little bit more adoption at that point. But it's been a great steady curve as long as we can go back for a year and a half. It's just really amazing when you sit down and think about all the work that a small number of us do on a regular basis to service, approaching 2 million users. So it's just amazing. Humbles you, really.
Okay, so if you're one of those 2 million users, or 1.8 at the moment, and you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I really wish to talk about X. Like I said elsewhere in the program, all you've got to do is drop us an email, feedback@launchpad.net, or go to help.launchpad.net/podcast with a capital P and tell us what you want to hear on the show. Other than that, I should thank very much Barry Warsaw, who is one of our star developers, and I'm thanking him now because he provided our podcast theme tune, which is called Obscurity. Like I say, get in touch with us, feedback@launchpad.net. Thank you very much, Joey and Elliot, for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Matt. And thanks to all of our users, Steve.
Yeah, thanks very much for listening to us, and I hope that you will join us again. The best place to find this, if you want to subscribe, is news.launchpad.net/category/podcast/feed. Thanks very much, and goodbye. Elliot, you're a little quiet there. Could you just talk for me about what you had for breakfast, please?
For breakfast today, I had a blueberry bagel with butter on it and some Costa Rican coffee.
Are you able to get closer to the mic, or?
Hey, you know what?
What?
I just realized I had my headset on backwards and the microphone was behind my head.
Oh, like the visual on that was just superb.